Thanks, Robert, for the kind introduction. And it's very nice to be here to see many old friends and meet some new friends. So today I will be talking about a new framework where the solution to the cosmodal constant problem with Weinberg's principle also implies a small Higgs mass. This is based on work done with Mina Savas, who are both in the audience, and Victor and Ken. Okay. So first, I will give a short review of the kind of naturalness problems we have, mostly the electroweak hierarchy problem and the cosmodal constant problem. I will summarize the known solutions to both problems and try to motivate you to see why we try to construct the framework that we do. Okay, so first, the electroweak hierarchy problem. So the electroweak hierarchy problem is the problem that a parameter, the Higgs mass squared, which is not protected by any symmetry, is measured to be much smaller than the cutoff scale of the theory. In the standard model case, it's basically the Planck scale. The smallness of the Higgs mass can be explained with two ways. The first way is called naturalness and symmetry. And the idea of this is basically, instead of having the cutoff scale at the Planck scale, we propose some new symmetry, mostly supersymmetry, to bring the cutoff scale down from the Planck scale to somewhere near the weak scale. And if we measure, if the cutoff scale of the theory is near the weak scale, and we measure some Higgs mass that is at the weak scale, it will appear natural. The other way to explain the Higgs hierarchy problem is called the anthropic principles. And here the idea is that instead of bringing the cutoff scale down from the Planck scale to the weak scale, we say that there is a huge landscape of vacua for different Higgs masses from negative UV scale squared to plus UV scale squared. And the reason that we are living in a special one where the Higgs mass is small is because only there will we be able to have the right mass for the quarks so that they can make up complex enough atoms which later make up complex beings like ourselves. Okay. We can apply these two scenarios also to the cosmodal constant problem, which is the naturalness problem of the cosmodal constant, which is another parameter that is not protected by any symmetry, but measured to be 10 to the 120 smaller compared with the cutoff of, scale of the theory, Planck scale. Here, we only have a solution with anthropics. Such a solution is proposed by Weinberg. Again, here we have a huge landscape of vacua, much more finely spaced vacua structure compared with the Higgs one, from a negative UV scale to the fourth to plus UV scale to the fourth. And the reason that we are living in a vacua where the cosmodal constant is small is because only there will we have a long period of matter domination, which is crucial for galaxies to form and ourselves to flourish. Here, unlike the Higgs hierarchy problem, we will not have we do not have a naturalness solution. And the reason is that even if we change the cutoff scale from Planck scale to the fourth to weak scale to the fourth, we still have a hierarchy problem of 10 to the 60. Okay, yes. So that's the current status of the two naturalness problems. And today we will be talking about new framework where we will try to use the galactic principle that solves the cosmodal constant problem to also solve the hierarchy Higgs hierarchy problem. The reason we think it is possible is because this principle is very powerful. It solves already solves the naturalness problem of 10 to 120. Maybe with some kind of structures we build, we can also solve as a byproduct some hierarchy problem of 10 to the 32. Okay, so that's all for the introduction. And here we will be talking about what kind of structure that we are trying to build, which is showing this plot. The structure we are trying to build is that everywhere else in the Higgs Higgs mass landscape, we will only have a few vacua where the cosmological constant can be different. Well, only at the place where the Higgs mass is at the weak scale, we will be able to have a huge number of vacua where within which one of them will accidentally have a small Higgs mass, a small cosmological constant, and therefore we will have a vacua here, only have a vacua here where we can solve the cosmological constant problem. And everywhere else, the total number of red dots at together will be some number that is more like 10 to the 32 instead of 10 to 120. And everywhere there, we will now be able to solve the cosmological constant problem. Any question about the framework?
Where does the 10 to the 32 come from?
Oh, the 10 to the 32 is just the total number of different vacua. If we say that the cutoff scale is at the Planck scale for the Higgs that we need. Okay, it's basically the Planck scale squared over the Planck mass squared over the Higgs mass squared.
I have a question.
Okay.
Why not the opposite? I thought that was better, actually.
Well,
I know you're building the theory to do whatever you want, right? But okay, in the grandiose scheme of building theories to do whatever we want, why not look for correlations between a small cosmological constant and a particular depth of things?
Actually, we are looking for a correlation between the cosmological constant with a particular Higgs valve. And this Higgs valve is, as we will show later, is controlled by some fermion sector, which gives you the weak scale.
I read the picture of the can I just understand? So you're saying that for the observed Higgs valve, you want to make tons and tons and tons of possible values for the cosmological constant? Is that the vertical axis?
Yes.
Okay. So you can only scan the cosmological constant
is
the Higgs.
Where Higgs is at this particular point.
So what motivates this choice of specific?
Huh?
What motivates this? Is there a deeper motivation for you to have the bed stacked in this specific?
Oh, because we are living in a vacuum where the Higgs has the weak scale? I guess. Okay. Yeah, so we are trying to solve, the problem we are trying to solve here is the Higgs hierarchy problem. Okay, so, all right. Now let's get into the detailed construction. So today I will be giving you one example of a construction within this framework. This will be a 5D model. We also have 4D models possible, but today we will be only focusing on this 5D model. So the talk will be focused on this picture, and we will give you more and more. I will give you more and more details as we go along the talk. So don't worry if you don't understand like why all of these things has to be there. Now, okay. So the structure is the following. We have a 5D model where this horizontal line represents a fifth dimension, while the two vertical line represents three brain, where the on the y equals zero brain, the standard model of fields live, while on the y equals r brain, there is only some brain tension. Okay, so the gravity propagates through all of the fifth dimension. Well, all the standard model gauge groups are localized on one dimension only. In the bulk, we have gravity, we have the bulk cosmological constant, and we have one additional 5D fermion, whose Casimir energy will control the stabilization of this fifth dimension. On both brains, we'll have brain tension, which we'll scan, okay, such that to find a universe where the cosmological constant is small. Also, we will have this Higgs mass scanning, such that there will be a vacuum where the Higgs mass is small. We are now going to scan the 5D cosmological constant in this talk, though scanning it will only change quantitatively our conclusion, but just for the sake of simplicity of the discussion, we will not be scanning this guy in this talk. So again, the things that we'll be scanning is the sigma 1, sigma 2, and the Higgs mass. Okay, so with such a 5D structure, the things that we want to achieve is the following. So first, we want to, okay, question.
Can we measure this lambda 5, or why do we integrate this numerical constant? I mean, how different is
it? Oh, so the lambda 5, the two brain tensions, and the Higgs mass are all now protected by symmetry. So we basically allow, usually we allow them all to scan. But just for simplicity of discussion, we'll keep this guy large but not scanning. Okay. So let's come back to the recipes. So the things that we want to show in this talk are the following. So first, we will show that the cosmological constant problem can only be solved if all of these scanners are utilized. Okay, especially we will need the second brain tension vacua such that to scan the cosmological constant on this brain to zero. Secondly, we will have to show that these vacua, the second brain tension vacua, are only accessible to scan the cosmological constant if the fifth dimension is stabilized. And then we will show that the fifth dimension is stabilized when and only when the Casimir energy of this bulk fermion is repulsive. And last, we will show that the Casimir energy is only repulsive if the Higgs is at the weak scale. Okay, so these will be the points that we are going to show in more detail later. And since they are so important, let me say those again from the Higgs side. Okay, so here we will show that only when the Higgs is at the weak scale, we have a repulsive Casimir energy, which is crucial for the stability of the fifth dimension and the availability of this second brain tension vacua, which is crucial for solving the cosmological constant problem. This will be outline of the main part of the talk as well, and we will actually show that the detailed construction for each of these three points in this direction. Okay. Any question about the introduction? Okay, good. All right, so now let's get to the second part. So first, I will be showing that only when the Higgs VAV is at the weak scale will we have a repulsive Casimir energy. Okay? To show that, we will have to give you more details about how these fermions, the brain localized fermions and the bulk fermion coupled to the Higgs. Okay? So first, I will be discussing these brain localized, how the brain localized fermions are coupled to the Higgs, such that only when Higgs VAV is at the weak scale, the spectrum of these fermions, especially the neutral component of these fermions, will be changed a lot. And these changes can propagate propagate to the bulk fermions as well and change the Casimir energy. Secondly, we will show that the lightest eigenstate of the brain localized fermion through mixing with the of the brain localized fermion through the mixing with the bulk fermion can also change the spectrum of the bulk fermion a lot, and therefore also change the Casimir energy coming from these bulk fermions. Okay. Sorry.
Why do I need the second brain? Because it's an S-type geometry, right? So
yes.
If I take sigma 2 to infinity, like the second brain to infinity,
yes.
Then sigma 1 is my UV brain, and I can always get 0 CC just by scanning the sigma 1. So why
yes, so like if we have enough vacua,
to scan sigma 1 brain attention to very very finely, we will be able to solve the cosmological constant only with the brain tension vacua on the sigma 1 brain. Mm-hmm. But if we do not have that many vacua on the sigma 1 brain,
okay,
then we will necessarily need also to have the sigma 2 vacua. Mm-hmm. Okay. Now let's first look at the brain localized fermion sector. Okay, the brain localized fermion sector is the most important. It has two terms of mass matrix. So let me first introduce what kind of fermions they are. Okay, so first we will have a pair of electroweak doublet fermion. Okay. The L and LC, you can think of them basically like the standard model left-handed leptons. And we also add a pair of electroweak singlet fermion, and you can think of them basically as the right-handed neutrinos. Okay, so since we are adding a Dirac pair for both, we can add have a Dirac mass for both. We'll call it M0 and M1, and we will keep M0 larger than M1 in this talk. Okay. And once we have these fermions, they can also couple to the Higgs. And we will have the Yukawa coupling between the doublet and the singlet fermions and the Higgs. Okay? When we have this, we actually, this can be simplified to basically a 2x2 mass matrix. Okay? And the two mass eigenstates coming from this mass matrix is plotted in this plot. Here, the x-axis is the Higgs VAF, basically the Higgs VAF, while the y-axis is the mass of the two mass eigenstates. Okay, we will be focusing on the lighter one, M1, the lighter mass eigenstate, which is represented by this green line. Okay, so let's look at the 2x2 mass matrix. When the Higgs VAF is very small, the off-diagonal terms are very small, and we can basically ignore them. And the lighter mass eigenstate is basically M1, okay? So M1 here. And when the Higgs VAF is very large, the off-diagonal terms are very large, and we can ignore the diagonal terms. And basically, both mass eigenstates will increase linearly with V, having a mass Y times V. However, in the middle, at some point, this 2x2 mass matrix will have will go through a point where the determinant of the mass matrix goes to zero, when V is at this special value here. And at this point, what happens is that the lighter mass eigenstate has a mass that goes to zero. Okay, this corresponding to a situation where there is an additional chiral symmetry, which is already broken by terms in the Lagrangian, actually accidentally restored at this point. Phenomenologically, this will show up as a very light fermion, a fermion that has a mass that is unnaturally light at this point. Okay, so here again, let's remember this green curve, because later we will be mixing this mass eigenstate with the bulk fermions. Okay, so the mixing between the brain localized fermions with the bulk fermion is basically represented also by a 2x2 mass matrix. Okay, when this brain localized mass is of the brain localized fermion is very large, so M1V very large, this matrix basically look like a neutrino seesaw mass matrix. And it will, once you integrate out the brain localized fermion, this will give you a very small brain localized mass to the bulk fermion, okay, chi. However, when M1V is very small, you can ignore the diagonal terms, and the brain localized fermion and the bulk fermion maximal mix, and they both have a brain localized mass of order mu. Okay, this situation is shown in this plot. So we will be separating our parameter space into two categories. The first one is when mu is larger than M1 of V, which corresponding to the case when the Higgs is at the weak at this special scale, which will be identifying as the weak scale. We will be calling this region class one, and we will be showing that in class one, the Casimir energy is repulsive. On the other hand, if M1V is larger than mu, which correspond to these regions where Higgs is not near this particular V star, we'll be calling these regions class two, and we will be showing that the Casimir is attractive in these regions always. Okay, so in the following slides, throughout the talk, we will be always using the blue color for class one type vacuum where the Higgs is at the weak scale, and red color for cases where the Higgs is not at the weak scale. Okay, sorry. Now let's get to this figure. So this figure shows the Casimir energy of this bulk fermion as a function of the size of actual dimension, normalized to this mixing scale mu, okay? So beta here is basically the coefficient of the Casimir energy, and beta larger than zero means repulsive, and beta less than zero means attractive. Okay, the detailed number is not really, does not really matter, just whether it's positive or negative, okay. So let's look at the two limiting cases of M1 over mu, okay. So when M1 over mu, the mass ratio is very large, corresponding to the case where Higgs is not at the weak scale, the bulk Casimir energy is always going to be attractive. However, when M1 over mu goes to zero, corresponding to the case when the Higgs is at the weak scale, it is still attractive when the size of actual dimension is very small, but become very repulsive when the actual dimension size become large. And the reason for that is when the size of actual dimension is very small, the KK scale is very large, and so a small brain localized mass of order mu is not going to change the profile of the bulk fermion very much in the bulk, and also not change the Casimir energy very much. However, when the size of the actual dimension is large, this brain localized mass become more and more significant, and it can change the bulk profile a lot, bulk profile a lot, such that the Casimir energy become repulsive.
Can I ask a quick question? Sorry.
Yes.
So what about the, why do you neglect the mixing between the heavy mass eigenstate and the bulk fermion? Is that zero for some reason?
What I didn't tell you is that the one that we cannot write a mixing between the electroweak doublet with the bulk fermion because it's a violet gauge symmetry, and also the lighter mass eigenstate will always be predominantly the singular state, M1. So when we write down the mixing between the singular state with the bulk fermion, it basically mostly makes the lighter mass eigenstate with the bulk fermion. Okay. All right. So let me conclude this part. So what we showed here is that in order for the Casimir energy to be repulsive or beta is positive, we need two things to happen. So first, the brain localized mass ratio M1 over mu has to be much smaller than one, which corresponds to the case where Higgs VAV is at the weak scale. And the second, the fifth dimension size, R, has to be larger or equal to one over mu, which is a scale that is about 100 times larger than the weak scale. Okay. One thing that I want to stress here is mu here is not going to be as small as the size that is length scale that corresponds to the 40 cos module constant. Okay, so it's a scale that is somewhere GeV-ish in this model mostly. Okay, so that's all for the previous section, and now let's come to a new part. And in this part, we will be showing you that only when the Casimir energy is repulsive, we will be able to have a stabilized fifth dimension, in which case we will be able to access all the second brain tension vacua. So here we will not go into very much detail of calculating the Einstein equations, solving the Einstein equations, but just tell you what we are trying to do here and then what we get out of it. Okay? So what we'll be doing is we will take the Casimir and stress energy we get from last part of the talk and plug it in to the 5D Einstein equation together with the brain tensions and the bulk CCs. What we will be doing is we will be first solving the background equations, which is something basically very much like three-dimensional equations in cosmology, and find a static solution. And after that, we'll try to study the linear perturbations on top of this background solution to see whether the solutions we find are stable or unstable. So whether we are finding a maximum or a minimum. Okay, so here are the things that we find. Okay, so we find that in order that we have a stabilized extra dimension, and also which has a cosmological constant, and also has a 4D cosmological constant that goes to zero, we need to scan first this sigma 1 tension to a precision of corresponding to the size of extra dimension. This scanner is needed to get an extra dimension that is large enough that can be affected by physics at the weak scale relating to the Higgs particle. Okay. And then we need to scan the sigma 2 tension to a precision that is corresponding to the cosmological constant observed in four dimensions. And this scanning is required to have a small cosmological constant. On top of that, if we want a stable and a static solution, we find that we need a repulsive Casimir or beta larger than zero. And as we know from last part of the talk, this corresponds to the case where Higgs VEV is at the weak scale and the size of extra dimension is relatively large. Okay? And when we combine this point with the previous point one, we will see that the effectiveness of our structure requires a coarse scanner on the y equals zero brain, where all the standard fields live, to a precision of mu to the fourth, which is much larger than the requirement of scanner on the y equals r brain, which requires a scanner with the density of the 4D cosmological constant. We'll be referring this guy. We will be referring to this guy as a coarse scanner and this guy as a fine scanner. Okay.
So you need an enormous hierarchy of the parameters that you stick into the model as a price of entry. That seems to be true. Well, you're trying to explain the hierarchy. I mean, in some sense, you could think of the cosmological constant problem as trying to explain the hierarchy between, in the most generous sense, something like the weak scale and the scale of the cosmological constant. But here you're putting it in. You're just,
we are solving, again, we are solving every problem anthropically, so we have to always create a landscape that with a fine enough like a scanning density such that we can at least find a one vacuum where the cosmological constant is small. That's basically why we need all these scanners here.
Okay, so to get the right density, you need that enormous hierarchy.
We need an enormous number of scanners. It's not necessarily a hierarchy.
By the hierarchy, I think it means the difference between the scanning on the left versus the scanning on the right.
We do not necessarily need more scanners on this brain compared with this one. We can actually put the same number of total vacua on both brain, and we will still have a solution So in that case, we cannot raise the cutoff scale to all the way to the 5D Planck scale that we have in this model. Okay. So later we will be counting the vacuoles, and in that and then like it will be more clear how many we need in total on both brains, and in order that the cosmological constant problem is only solved in the case where the kick is at the weak scale. Okay. So here there is we are going to summarize what we learned in this section. Okay. So the blue corresponds to the case where Higgs is at the weak scale, while the red corresponds to the case where the Higgs is not at the weak scale. Here, what we are plotting is the radiant potential as a function of the size of the actual dimension. As we just said, if we have the right amount of scanners on sigma 1 and sigma 2 brain, we will be able to find a solution where the cosmological constant is very close to zero, and near which is represented by this point zero here. And near that point, we can vary the 4D the sigma 2 tension, which will also vary the 4D cosmological constant when we will observe in that point zero vacuum. Okay? So basically, in this case, the scanning of the sigma 2 tension is actually scanning the cosmological constant at point zero. However, in the case where the Higgs VEV is not at the weak scale, first we will have this point 2, which corresponds to a maximum, and and this maximum have a very short lifetime, and we will not be able to live, we will not be able to form structure in a maximum that has a short lifetime. Other than that, we'll have this point one here, which corresponds to the to a stable but non-static minimum. In that minimum, if you scan the sigma two tension, it will not change the cosmological constant that we observe in four dimensions at this point one at point one vacuoles, and especially. The point one vacuum will always have a cosmological constant that corresponds to the scanning density of the sigma one tension brain. Okay, so that's all for last segment of the talk. And here we will go on using the things we learned from part two to see how many vacua on each brain we will have, and we can have such that only when the sigma two tension brains are available, we will be able to solve the cosmological constant problem. Okay, so. So what we will be doing here is basically to count the total number of blue dots here, and show that they are they have a large enough number where and we can solve the cosmological constant problem there, and then count the total of number of red dots and see that given that we solve the cosmological constant problem within one of the blue dots, we will not have enough number of red dots where the cosmological constant problem can be solved in any of the dots. Okay, sorry. Okay, so first let's see how many vacua we need. How many vacua is required such that we. Have a solution to the cosmological constant problem. Okay, first, as we said earlier, we need a Higgs scanner such that one of them will have a weak scale Higgs, and this is represented in the green circle here. And then we will need a coarse sigma one scanner such that we have a sizable extra dimension which can be affected by weak scale physics. And then we have a fine sigma 2 scanner such that the 4D cosmological constant can be zero. Okay, so here we have some additional gamma factors, which are the warping factors of the bulk. For the discussion, we can just now set them to one. The reason that we cannot set them to one is all phenomenological. Okay, so then let's see what we achieve with all of these scannings. Okay, the things that we achieve is we select a vacuum with galaxy principle that has a small Higgs mass. Okay. And we have a selective vacuum where the cosmological constant is small. And as a byproduct, we see that we actually have also a superlight radion that also appears unnatural, which has a mass that appears unnatural. Okay, so that's all for the discussion about the 0.0 vacuum or when the Higgs is at the weak scale. Now let's turn to this 0.1 and see how small a cosmological constant we can get in these 0.1 vacuum. Okay, so in 0.1, basically we'll be only accessible the only vacuum that are accessible are the Higgs vacuum and the sigma 1 vacuum. And we actually expect, since the Higgs vacuum all have a different Higgs, a VAV, they probably also have a different cosmological constant as well. So basically what we do is we count the total number of different Higgs and sigma 1 tension vacuum and see within all of these vacuums how small a cosmological constant one can get. And if we plug in numbers that is not already excluded by experiments, and the highest possible UV scale, we find that the smallest cosmological constant one can get in those kind of vacua is around kV to the force, okay? Otherwise known as 24 order magnitude larger than the one in our universe, okay? So people should expect that we will not be able to form galaxy in a universe that is 24 order magnitude smaller than the one we have. However, complete proof of the fact that there is no galaxies can be formed by any kind of matter in a type 0.1 type vacua requires knowledge on also how baryon matter and dark matter properties change as a function of the Higgs VAV as well, and how they evolve in all of these universes. We have checked all of that, but because we do not have like a lot of time, I'm not going to go into details about these, but I'm very happy to answer questions afterwards. Okay, so that's the bulk part of the talk. And I hope I have convinced you that only when the Higgs is at the Higgs VAV is at weak scale, we will be able to have repulsive chasm energy, which is crucial for a stable and a static 5D construction, and also the availability. Most importantly, the availability of the second brain tension vacuum, which is crucial for solving the cosmological constant problem. Questions? Yes.
So given that the mass scale of the radion is so light, what does that imply about the stability of that vacuum that you found? So I mean, is the can that live for the age of the universe, or you have to worry about the case?
Well, it's still a vacuum, right? So
but it looked like it was only a local vacuum, like you could run away to zero radius or if, or
you mean like a quantum tunneling?
Yeah.
But like the radion mass is very small, but like the radion potential is very wide. Okay, so actually the barrier height is actually very large, and it is not you cannot really tunnel through the barrier to somewhere else in the age of, through the age of the universe we have. Other questions?
So, yeah, why do I need necessarily relate this, like, think about the cosmological constant problem to formulate this mechanism? Isn't this just a mechanism to produce many and vacuum with light peaks? And, yeah, for instance, let's say tomorrow somebody comes with a very smart solution of cosmological constant problem, so that it's, okay. We don't need anthropics anymore. Uh-huh. It's just, for some mysterious reason, like some dynamics to be shielded in all this vacuum. Uh-huh. Your mechanism will still work, right? It will still say most of the vacuum will have small Higgs
value. Mm-hmm. I mean, his thing relies on scan.
Yeah.
No, it's
everyone.
I
think it depends on the solution.
Let's say you don't need to scan. Let's say for some mysterious reason, all this vacuum cosmological constant is zero. Still, you have a landscape where most of the vacuum has light peaks, and then one would say, okay, that one would expect to find oneself in the vacuum with the light peaks. So one doesn't really need the CC part. I think it's mechanism on its own. Just mechanism producing landscape with lots of light fixes. And then how you marry this with cosmological constant problem, that's an independent question now.
I think like marry it with a cosmological constant problem, like give us a more concrete way to measure like whether we are more likely to live in those blue vacua compared with the red ones. Because though like we may statistically have like many more in a place where the Higgs value is small, people can still argue like there are those things that exist. However, what we are saying here is that though they exist, they do not have a large enough number where the cosmological constant can be solved.
Yeah, but that's not a special feature of this mechanism. That would be true kind of natural mechanism for Higgs work, right? Meaning for any landscape which produces many vacuum with light Higgs, say by some symmetry criterion, you will say the same thing, right?
Yeah,
so that sense.
That's okay. Yeah.
Sorry, you're equally likely to be the red dot and the blue dot. It's just the blue dot has much more numbers.
Yeah, we have too many more blue dots, such that accidentally we will find one of the blue dots has a small cosmological constant.
You sort of have this like build-up function kind of distribution.
Yes.
But do you have some like, I was guessing you have some theoretical motivation to motivate this such a weird vacuum like. I know the model allows you to do that, but.
Yes. So, well, the reason, again, is we want to solve the electroweak hierarchy problem, and if we want to use the galactic principle, if we want to actually connect the solution to the hierarchy problem with the cosmological constant problem, we need to have a structure where the only place you can solve the cosmological constant problem is where the Higgs mass is small. And that's, I guess, the motivation why you have to construct such a structure. Okay, so how long do I have?
About 15 minutes.
Okay, so that's all for the discussion of the model itself. And now let's turn to phenomenology. So in this part, I will not be trying to give you detailed analysis of how things are excluded and how things can be probed, but just focusing on the fact that why do we have phenomenological predictions at all? Normally, when we think about anthropic solutions, it always has the problem that it does not have concrete predictions. But here, since we are connecting two different problems, and make sure that they are both solved by one anthropic principle, the structure that we use to connect these two problems give us phenomenological implications, which are actually very strong. And people, we can search for both at the LHC with collider experiments, and also in short distance gravity tests and other several different dark matter measurements. Okay. So first, let's see why do we have LHC predictions at all. The reason why we have LHC prediction is something that I haven't told you about the mass matrix. Okay, so when we look at the mass matrix, I talked about in the first part very carefully, we'll see that the Yukawa coupling, the doubly mass M naught, and the mixing between the singlet with the bulk fermion mu are all protected by some sort of chirosymmetry, and they can naturally be small. However, the mass of the singlet state N1, this M1 parameter, receive one loop correction from this diagram like this. Okay, so and since the Higgs valve is selected by these two mass parameters and the Yukawa coupling, we cannot raise this double mass M naught to infinitely high. Doing that will also imply an infinitely large M1 mass for the fixed Yukawa coupling, and then you basically won't be able to select a Higgs valve that is at the weak scale, small enough. So this quantum correction, together with this requirement, tells us that we have to have some new doublets, electroweak doublets, near the weak scale. Okay. So one can go and search for the look for these things, and here we plot the constraints on the electroweak electroweak doublet and singlet states as function of the electroweak doublet mass and the Yukawa coupling of it to the Higgs, and we see that for doublet masses smaller than 200 GeV, they are basically excluded by direct production of these doublets. While if the Yukawa coupling is too large, then the Higgs can decay to this, the singlet states, and we are excluded by Higgs invisible width. Both experiments are going to be improved in the future, and they will cut into interesting parameter space of our model. Okay, so far we talked about the fermions, and now let's come to this ultra-light radion. So the reason why we have radion phenomenology is because this radion appears to be unnaturally light, okay? So especially if we plug in numbers that is not already excluded by collider experiments and some moderate warping, we'll find that radion wavelength has a size of order a few meters. And people know that whenever we have a light scalar with a wavelength of a few meters, we can search for it by looking for forces between two massive objects, like two spherical balls, like the Cavendish experiments. Okay, so in order to do that, we need to also know how radion coupled with matter. So the radion coupled with matter in this way. It is coupling like the gravity, but additionally suppressed by the warping factor. And the reason for that is unlike the graviton, which has a profile peaked around the standard model brain, the radion has a profile that peaked around the other brain, and it's overlapping with the standard matter is small by the warping factor. Okay, so. So these interaction coupling with matter will induce a potential very much like a gravity potential with a force, the strength of the force suppressed by this alpha parameter, which is basically 1 over the warping squared, and which has a range of corresponding to the wavelength of the radio. Okay. So we have many fifth force and equivalence principle tests that excludes basically a parameter space where the warping is small, which corresponding to the case where the radion couples very strongly. And these experiments are also going to be improved to cut into a more interesting parameter space of our model. Okay, one last phenomenology is if these radions are dark matter. So if these radions are dark matter, other than the fifth force test and the collider bonds we have, we actually can probe these particles with comparison between different optical clocks, or optical clocks with nuclear clocks in the future at very low frequencies, and with atom interferometer experiments at medium frequencies, and with bar detectors at relatively high frequencies. So again, if the radion is the dark matter, we have much more different probes searching for dark matter that can cut into very interesting parameter space of our model.
So I'm not familiar with the model pretty much. So the radion has to also be light for the scanning reason.
The radion has to be light.
Yeah, like the previous page, like the radion has to be this light just because you also need to scan through the.
The radion has to be light because we have to have a large enough actual dimension. And the tuning that gives you a large actual dimension actually also gives you a light radion. Okay. All right. So, last thing I want to say is that. The collider signatures and the low energy experiment signatures actually have many correlations. First, if we are, well, all of these are very futuristic, and we haven't seen any of them. But if we are going to see them in the future, there are ways that will point to our model very strongly. So the first thing is that the neutral component and the charge component of the electroweak doublet are split by a mass scale that is this M1. Okay, and unlike things like split supersymmetry, where the charge component is always heavier than the neutral component, here the neutral component is actually heavier than the charge component. This M1 is actually also going to be controlling the size of the Higgs invisible width. And if we see both the electroweak doublets and the Higgs invisible width, we can measure this parameter M1 with two different experiments. And if they agree, that's a strong indication. Another thing is that the electroweak singlet state has a mass of order mu due to mixing. And this mu is also the parameter that controls the mass of the radion. Okay, so if one measure the mass and the coupling of the radion with matter, it will uniquely determine a warping factor of the bulk, and also the size of the fifth dimension mu. And if we measure again the same mu from these two experiments, it will also point very strongly to our model. So that's it. So I hope I have convinced you that we build a technically natural model where the solution of the cosmological constant problem will automatically imply a small Higgs. We have many predictions coming from this model. First, we predict some electroweak doublet states with masses near the weak scale. We predict singlet states with a unique coupling to the Higgs mass, Higgs boson. And most importantly, most interestingly, we have an ultralight radion, which can be searched with future fifth force and dark matter experiments, and also black hole super radiants. And that's all. Thank you.
So out of curiosity, I mean, let's assume that everything is equal to light.
Mm-hmm.
So any value of lambda that comes out of this theory, any value for the Higgs web that comes out of this theory, if you were to look at the probability distribution, given that everything's equally likely, like what's the expected variance on lambda, and what's the expected variance on the Higgs web that comes out of that assumption? I mean, you're making some prediction. Based on anthropics, right?
Yes.
So I'm just curious, you know, like condition on lambda being exactly what we observe.
Uh-huh.
What's the spread in the Higgs web that you get? Is it predicted to be precisely what we see, or is it predicted to have a pretty wide range?
It's predicted to within a small range around a specific Higgs valve, and that Higgs valve can be chosen choosing the mass parameter M naught to be as the weak scale. Okay, so it will have a small range, but all of them will be small Higgs valve around the weak scale.
How small?
When you say small, how small will the range? So the range is, it depends on the parameters we put in the theory, and it can be like a 1% or like a 10% or like even like less than 1%. All of these will only change like a very very mildly, like what is the cutoff scale we can raise the theory to.
If the radial mass is not determined, I'm just wondering why it's not determined. If I look at its coupling to the standard model, right?
Yes.
It has coupling to chi mu mu down by some warping and so on. So uh-huh. If I put that in the loop, I would typically get very much large corrections to the radial mass. So
yes.
I would have to cut it somewhere because your effective theory will kick in. And where I would cut it, that's where the mass should be. Because the lower would be unnatural, I think.
Well,
tuning.
Yeah, first, the radial itself, the mass rate of the radial itself is unnatural because we actually do the tuning to make it small. But like this tuning is not the tuning to just get the radial mass small. It's the tuning that we get the a large enough extra dimension. And this amount of tuning to get a large enough extra dimension is also the amount of tuning that you will see if you naively calculate the loop cutoff at MUV and see like what is the amount of tuning one need such that to lower this mass to the one that we calculate.
I don't understand why it's still in such a huge order of magnitude then. The mass, right?
It's so huge. Well, because I guess
because of the warping, right? No. The warping.
The warping actually
relates the coupling, right? But if I'm in, let's say I'm at the 4D effective theory below the scale where it breaks down, right?
Okay.
And I calculate the correction of the mass. I will come up with some correction.
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, but
the reason is that the radial is a non-local object. And so basically, like the cutoff scale that you should be using is the size of actual dimension.
Sure.
And using the 4D effect, distribution
feeds back, right? And warping feeds back on the mass, right? Because we don't know the amount of warping, we don't know the size of the coupling to the normal matter. So we don't know what the value of...
But this is also consistent, right? This is also consistent because depending on the warping you get...
I'm trying to understand why there is such a huge range for the radial mass. Right?
Yes.
There's no reason for that, right?
Oh, you mean the abstraction? The figures? So like the reason why we have a huge range of radial mass is because the scale mu can be very different. So like the radian, the size of actual dimension needs to be tuned to this parameter mu, right? And this parameter mu can be like a Fermi or maybe like a micron. And depending on like how big the mu, parameter mu is, the size of the dimension is going to be different and the radial mass is also going to be different. Okay.
If you added more of these doublet and singlet fields as chiral symmetries, just like on the Higgs the correct value, I mean, can you extend the cutoff because you get more back to it?
If we have more of these doublet and singlet, well, if all of them pick the same weak scale, then basically what you get is you are raising. All of them is going, you're adding like many flavors, and this is going to increase the it's not going to, I don't think it's going to increase the number of vacua, but it's going to increase the radial mass. It will make this like a radial potential like more and more sharp. It will be like a radial potential that has a larger and larger like a barrier. So it's less and less likely that you are going to tunnel out of it. But the number counting, I think, stay the same.
So no more questions then. Well, Curly is around for the next 3 weeks, so feel free to come talk to him. But let's thank Curly again. Sorry.
Thank you, everybody.